Welcome back to the High Functioning Disaster and to part three of my conversation with Amy Vince. I'm your host, Sasha Holder. Today, we're exploring how the body remembers and how we can help it finally let go. Amy explains how unprocessed emotions are stored in our energy meridians and chakras, why the root chakra is the foundation for healing, and how EFT tapping helps release emotional blockages so the body and mind can return to balance. We also talk about the 90-second rule for feeling emotions, why stillness can feel uncomfortable at first, and what it looks like to thrive on the other side of trauma, where boundaries, self-worth, and inner peace replace survival mode. One content note. This episode includes general discussion of trauma, emotional storage, and healing practices, but no graphic or detailed descriptions are included. So I'd like to move into the power of tapping and how your body remembers. I would encourage you to feel free to talk about the emotional storage in the body, chakras, gene expressions, practical healing tools, anything that you have in your wheelhouse that you feel would be helpful and are comfortable in discussing. So uncomfortable emotions get a bad rap.
Yes, definitely.
What happens when we don't deal with them?
Well, they don't go away. They don't go away. They just get suppressed. And over time, they do build up in our system. And they will cause problems at some point, physical problems. They will manifest as physical problems and or emotional problems at some point if we don't deal with them. And they do get stored in our, at the very least, our energetic system. But when they get, and what that looks like, I'll just say, is our energy meridians are the 14 energy meridians found in Chinese medicine, but there's also energy centers that start at the base of our tailbone and go all the way up to the top of our head and beyond, but I'm just going to focus on the ones, the seven chakras in our body. So there's energy centers and there's energy meridians that they all work together to hopefully keep us healthy and create balance in our lives. And so when we experience, when we have these emotions, these uncomfortable emotions, and we don't experience them, they end up as a blockage in either our energy meridians and or our chakras. And when energy is flowing in our system, that's when we are in a state of healing or in a state of health. So we always want our energy to be flowing. So when we have a trauma that results in a fear and a limiting belief about ourselves, it creates an energy blockage that energy doesn't flow through that spot. So similar to acupuncture, where they put a needle in your an acupressure point, it will help break up those energy blockages and allow our energy to flow again. And tapping works in the same way, except we are using the percussion of actually physically tapping on our acupressure points to start breaking up those energy blockages and allowing it, the energy to flow again and allowing us to be in a state of healing and health. So those uncomfortable emotions can be stored in different organs in our bodies, different joints in our bodies, depending on the emotion, depending on what happened. I mean, if we look at our chakra system, that is I use that every single day as a map to help decipher what people need to work through. And in general, I will say everybody needs to start at the very first chakra, at That is by far the place that you should start. Some people want to go directly to the heart chakra or directly to the crown chakra if they want to increase their spirituality. But I'm going to tell you right now, if we think of the chakras as like a building and each one builds on top of the other, you can't have a strong building without a good foundation. So you always start at the bottom. Start at the bottom and work your way up. So the root chakra is the place that houses all of our fears. That is the shadow that needs to be worked through in the root chakra. It's all of the fears, and that's big fears and little fears. I'm talking about like fear of not being worthy or deserving, a fear of not belonging, fear of rejection or abandonment, you know, big fears, or it could be fear of failure or fear of success. It could be any of those things. All of those fears need to be worked through with tapping, honoring and acknowledging them, and feeling compassion for the fact that they're there. And that will create balance in that root chakra. And once you've done that, then you've got a strong foundation that you can build on top of. And then I would go right to the second chakra. The second chakra, the shadow is guilt. So the second chakra too is all about relationships. So it's your relationship with money. It's your relationship with your creativity. It's your relationship with other people. It's your relationship with money. And a state of health in our second chakra is all about having a balance between vulnerability and power through all of our chakras, I should say. Vulnerability and power, you want to balance those always. And so the second chakra has to do with our like reproductive organs and our lower back. So in general, down in that area of our body, our first chakra, I should go back and say, has to do with joints, hips, knees and feet, and bigger systems on our body. So skin and like autoimmune issues are always really centralized on the root chakra, and work needs to be focused there if you have an autoimmune issue. So that's second chakra. And then third chakra is all about our identity, and the shadow there is shame. So if you have things that you feel shame about, whether it's experiences that you feel shame about, or character traits that you feel shame about, that's the shadow that needs to be worked through there in order to bring back that balance. And that has everything to do with our digestive system, like from our mouth down to our colon. So if there are issues like Crohn's disease or food allergies or, you know, whatever, constipation even, all of that has to do with the third chakra. And I would say, if you go in order and do first, second, third chakra, you're going to largely deal with most of the issues that everybody has in the world. And if you do that, then the rest of the chakras kind of take care of themselves. So it's those first chakras that really need the bulk of our attention. And if you have other work to do on your throat chakra and being able to speak your truth, or your heart chakra and being able to take down your armor, you know, that sort of thing, it's a lot easier to do if you've already created and cleared the foundation for making that possible. So if I went straight to my heart chakra and I wanted to take down my armor so that I could create space for a really loving relationship in my life, but I still had tons of fears about not being worthy or deserving, and I still had lots of guilt because I don't know, I'm not making enough money to be able to contribute evenly, and shame about, you know, maybe a traumatic experience that happened when I was a kid, my ability to create a really loving relationship is not truly there yet. So I could focus in on opening up my heart, but I wouldn't really attract that type of loving relationship I want. It would be all based on all of those shadows that are still there. And I would still be looking through those lenses when I'm looking for a partner. So it really benefits us to start at the bottom and work our way up.
I like how you framed the chakras and starting at the root chakra as a building, because you think of them as like building blocks when you said making a foundation. Before you said that, though, I'm familiar with chakras through practicing yoga, and I was automatically thinking of it as a tree. When a tree grows from the seed, it starts with a root.
Yes.
And it can't come up out of the ground until it has enough under the ground to support it. And the bigger it grows above the ground, the more it's growing under the ground in order to support that. So
that's a perfect analogy. Yes, I love it.
So I totally appreciate that. And I think your building analogy is excellent too, because if you build something and it doesn't have a good solid foundation, it's not going to stay. It's going to be dangerous to be a part of, like be in it, around it, whatever. And it's never going to pass code for inspection.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Yeah.
So are there any other things that you would like to share as far as what role our body plays in holding and releasing trauma, ways that blocked chakras or energy meridians show up physically in our body, like their physical symptoms?
Yeah. I think one of the easiest ways to explain it is just focusing on what the energy of fear and the energy of love. There are really only those two energies in the world, and everything else is an offshoot of one of those two. And if you think about it, when you get in a space of fear, your body contracts, you feel tense, like you just feel like like you're a smaller, like a more contracted version of yourself. And when you're in a space of love, it is a very kind of relaxed, expanded type of feeling. And so when you have a consistent experience of fear in your body, and you are cutting off blood supply with that contracted state, and you are cutting off energy because there are blockages from that fear, over time, it will manifest into something physical. I mean, even 95% of doctors agree that stress is the cause of basically all disease and all inflammation that's out there. They just don't know how exactly it causes it, but we know that stress is just a blanket term for fear and anxiety and stuff like that that happens in our body. So over time, it is bound to have an extreme physical effect. And this is just one of the ways. And you wouldn't think that our emotional state has such a huge impact on our physical body. But if you think about it, every time we have a fearful thought and cortisol, a hormone, a physical hormone gets released into our system, and we don't generally know how to deal with it or how to take that cortisol away. So and when that happens, by the way, a lot of our major systems in our body shut down. And so our digestive system is not operating as it should. Neither is our circulation system. Like, we are in a fear state. And when we are like that, we are not at our optimal selves, physically or emotionally. They work hand in hand. We are not separate beings physically and emotionally. It all happens in this vessel. So it makes sense that we need to give equal attention to our physical health, our spiritual health, and our emotional and intellectual health. We have to address all of those things because they work in tandem with each other. If everything isn't like equally distributed and it's a wheel, we're going to like consistently be hitting a pothole in our lives. And it's so much less effective to move forward like that than it is to be moving smoothly. So if we think of it in those terms, it just makes sense to try and lean into this stuff because it really is quite important work.
So why do you think uncomfortable emotions get such a bad rap? And then how can we learn to just sit with them instead of suppressing them?
Yeah. God, uncomfortable emotions have just been so vilified over the years. It's like, it's likened to like a demon of some kind. And it has just gotten such a bad rap. And it's unfortunate because it really isn't that bad. Like once we have the courage to lean into it and experience it for just a short period of time, 90 seconds, and it'll start dissipating. If we feel the feelings in our body, not just thinking and intellectualizing those feelings, but feeling the sensation of sadness in our body, feeling the nervousness in our belly and just allowing it, it goes away pretty quickly. But it's because people have been so uncomfortable with it over the years that we have never been taught how to do that. We talk about it. We intellectualize it a lot, and I think that's why everybody talks about therapy being such a great thing, but it also doesn't quite get us there entirely. We really have to feel the sensation, find where we're feeling the sensation in our body, first of all. Some of my clients feel it in their hands and their feet. Some of my clients feel it in their heart. Some of my clients, you know, will get a headache. None of it is wrong. We're just going to lean into feeling, try to feel it as much as possible, feel that headache as much as possible, lean into it. And then after a really short period of time, it'll go away.
That's incredibly interesting how different people experience different symptoms and just leaning into it and being with it and working through it is so powerful and helps to dissipate the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's been so scary. But it's because we get judged and criticized for it, and because it's been so vilified over the years, like it just isn't something we've ever been encouraged to do. And it feels like a weakness when we do that. And it feels incredibly vulnerable because somebody could judge or criticize us for it. If we indulge it, it's considered an indulgence in our uncomfortable emotions and something that hasn't been accepted as necessary yet. So for the time being, at least, until we have kind of an emotional revolution where people really recognize the importance of this, it will continue to be something that we just have to have our own personal courage and faith that doing this work is going to make a big difference. And hopefully, you know, there's just a willingness to lean in and try it at least once. And if we can get to the other side of the emotion and recognize the space that we created because of it, then, you know, it's just great encouragement to keep doing it, keep doing the work.
Sure. And there is no one way that works for everyone to heal.
Yeah.
And similarly to healing not being linear, you know, some people do get relief and healing from traditional talk therapy, mm-hmm. but many people don't.
Yeah.
So I definitely appreciate alternatives to that.
Yeah.
Particularly because I'm one who has never gotten relief from talk therapy. I don't understand what it's supposed to do for me. I think on a high level, I get it. Mm-hmm. But inside me, it feels like it's doing nothing except wasting my time telling the same stories over and over to different people, and it doesn't do anything to move past it. The only things that have worked for me are, you know, like learning. It's fascinating that we're having this conversation about sitting with your emotions.
Yeah.
Because a long time ago, I lived by myself in an apartment and I didn't have a lot of money. So I didn't really have money to go out and do things with my friends. And I was home a lot and I couldn't stand to be in silence. And I just felt like, you know, we all have that voice inside of us. And like, I very distinctly heard it say, you cannot stand to be with yourself.
Mm, wow.
And I thought, that's a bunch of crap. What? Uh-huh. I'm with myself all the time. But like, you cannot stand to be in silence without distraction and just be. And I think that on some level, that really made me mad because then I started. I've never been a really big TV watcher, but I like to have the noise. So I would not, no TV. And then I love, love, love music. Music is something that I probably could never live without, but I shut it off and I would just have silence and I hated it. And then I was even more angry because it was right?
Yeah.
But I learned to be with myself. And I think it's really powerful to just be able. It's, I think, meditative. I didn't know it at the time, but just to be still in the quiet. And not really thinking about anything, just being. And it's wild just how peaceful and calming that is to your entire system.
But it's not instinctual, right? I think that, first of all, our instinct is to go away from painful things. And turning into it takes a lot of courage. But I also think that we're taught to be productive beings. We're taught to keep moving, that those are the things that we value in our society. And if you have those introspective moments, then somehow you're not fulfilling that expectation. That societal expectation, that conditioning that we have learned throughout our lives. So it's twofold. It's not instinctual and it goes against kind of conditioning that we have received in our growing up years. But when we get there, like you said, boy, the rewards are big.
They are.
Yeah.
So early in our conversation, you talked about how your childhood beliefs shaped 100% of your decisions until you began healing. Mm-hmm. How do we start rewriting those old stories? And then what does thriving on the other side of trauma look like to you?
I think we start by letting go of our emotional attachment to those old stories. And letting go of the idea that is our identity. And we do that with tapping. I think that is really challenging to do just through our thoughts or just through talk therapy. I think tapping makes the ability for us to let go of our emotional attachment to those things so much faster and so much more effective. So if we can do that work while tapping, I think that is tremendously effective. And then what was the second part of your question?
What does thriving on the other side of trauma look like to you?
I love that question because I had it all wrong when I first started doing this work. I thought that, you know, I had all these parts of myself that I rejected, that I really hated, that I didn't want at all. I just wanted to get rid of them entirely. And I thought that that's what was going to happen when I started tapping. I thought I was going to get rid of all of my shadow thoughts and all of my, you know, unhealthy behavior. And that's not what happened. What happened was that I started to have compassion for those parts of myself that I had rejected. And while I started looking like Swiss cheese because I had, you know, gotten rid of all those parts of myself, now I was able to put those pieces back in. And they're still shadows, but I've put them back in to in the places that I had created a lot of holes and a lot of emptiness. And I feel more whole now. So my healing journey has totally turned out differently than I thought it would. And I feel so much more at peace because that I'm no longer having an impossible standard that I have to live up to. I'm just me. And I have all of these shadows, and I feel like I've healed them to the point that I have accepted them and I have compassion for them. But get rid of them? I don't think that I've done that. I've gotten rid of my emotional attachment to the trauma, and I've gotten rid of some fears. But I will always be doing this work and always trying to kind of bring back those elements of myself that I have rejected for so many years.
Would you say that through doing this work on yourself, that you've come to more wholly and completely not just accept, but love yourself?
I'm still working on that. But I am in a much better position now than I was, for sure.
Sure.
For sure.
Yes. And I think that we all will always have something to work on, because as humans, there isn't one of us who's perfect. And we won't ever be. Perfection is a mirage. And so I appreciate your vulnerability and being open to, like, saying that you are still working on loving and accepting yourself completely. What does it look like when someone moves through all those stored emotions and finds balance? Because you spoke about finding balance in your chakras between power and,
vulnerability.
Power, vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like when they've found the balance?
What it looks like is being able to do things like put boundaries around your own well-being. It means being able to confidently say no when somebody wants you to do something. It means feeling totally worthy and deserving of a really healthy income, and allowing yourself to share the things that you have shadows on, and be vulnerable in that way, and also feel confident that somebody knowing that isn't going to diminish your personal power at the same time. Sometimes it's necessary to be completely out of balance in order to move through something in our lives. But we have to have the ability to move in and out of both as needed. Just like we have to have the ability to move in and out of both masculine and feminine behavior in order to be in balance that way. We have both. And we have to be able to access it as each situation requires. So it's in constant flow. It's in constant movement, and we just have to decide for ourselves what is ideal.
Is there anything that you can think of that would really help someone who is struggling with that acceptance right now? Like, what is the tiniest, most minuscule thing that they could do to meet themselves where they are right now?
Good question. One of my favorite things to do is to look at myself from the perspective of my higher self. So what I've been taught is that our soul is really big. You know, who we are, who we really are is really big. And who we are in this physical plane is like somebody dipping their toe into the world. So if we think of our higher self, you know, that higher self is much bigger than who I am. And maybe even it has a God or a higher power kind of perspective. So when I look at myself from my higher self, I always feel just the most love, the most compassion for how hard I'm trying and for all of my things that I imagine are struggles and maybe aren't struggles. And I'm holding on to them thinking that I have to for some reason, but I'm not. Like, I just have a completely different perspective on who I am when I'm in my perspective and I'm looking at all the stuff on my desk that I haven't done yet, or, you know, all of the things that I have to do, laundry, blah, blah, blah. But when I take the perspective of my higher self, I have so much love and compassion for me, and it changes everything about the judgments and criticisms that I consistently have. So I encourage anybody to look at it from that perspective. What would your higher self or God say about how you're doing here? Because I guarantee you, it's not like the same voice that you have in your head that's telling you, you know, that judgmental and critical perspective. It's not that. So that's what I would say.
That's good. And that, I think that's really beautiful. Some people will say, well, what would you say to a friend? But sometimes I think that some people aren't that kind to their friends. They have a tougher approach, but coming from that softer, more accepting angle, it can be really powerful, particularly because we are our own worst critics, and usually no one can be harder on us than we are ourselves, even if we're not perfectionists. Because I think at the end of the day, we know if we can do better, or we feel like we could have done better, even if we did show up and give our best in whatever the situation is. That feeling of lack, I think, nags at us. And would you call that, I would call that shame. Would you call that shame?
Yes, I would call that shame and guilt. There's probably aspects of both in there. Yeah. And the underlying cause of that is the fear that we are unworthy or undeserving. Because if you didn't have that fear and you did something that wasn't to your best standard, you would have guilt about it, which is regret about not doing or doing something that you thought was wrong. But shame is a way of being. So guilt is a lot easier to dislodge than shame. So it starts with the fear, the underlying fear.
So is it easier to dislodge guilt because that's more external, and then shame is more internally driven? Do I have that correct?
Guilt is about, we'll just say it's about an event. And shame is about a way of being. So if you can dislodge guilt over not doing your best work or saying something that hurts somebody's feelings. You know, that's one event that is easy to dislodge versus I am ashamed because I'm a bad friend. You know, that's a much bigger topic to neutralize.
I can see that. Uh-huh. I definitely can see that.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything to this point that we haven't covered that you would really like to share?
Boy, we've talked about a lot of stuff. We've gotten really deep too. I love it.
This has been a great conversation.
Hopefully we haven't lost any listeners at this point. I just want to encourage people to try tapping, try leaning in. I know it is against all of our instincts to do that. And that's why it creates the most benefit.
How do people find you?
They can email me, amy@soarwithtapping.com. They can download the Soar with Tapping app from either the Android or the Apple Play stores, or they can go to my website, soarwithtapping.com. They can get in touch with me any one of those ways. I'm also on all social media. I do a little daily tapping to help give people a little gift and help them get through their day. And I encourage everybody to follow me or reach out, whatever they want.
Awesome. Well, that was such a really thorough and, for me, amazing conversation.
I loved it. I loved doing this deep talk. I am not really capable of anything less. this is my comfort zone.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Sasha.
That's a wrap on my conversation with Amy Vinci, EFT tapping therapist. And remember, she's offering 50% off a 1-year subscription to her Soar with Tapping app. Now, I've been using her app and have found it to be incredibly helpful. Prior to this conversation with Amy, I did not use tapping. And for the past several weeks, I have been working on things for myself using her app, and I found that it is incredibly helpful. I know that treatments and therapies are not one size fits all, but this one is definitely worth looking into. So check it out. You can have a free 1-week trial. And after your 1 week, you can get a subscription to continue if it is something that works for you. Come back next week where we launch into my conversation with Zulma Williams, the swearing therapist. She is so much fun, and I had such a good time talking with her, and I hope that you'll find it enjoyable too. See you then. And one last thing. The content shared on the High Functioning Disaster is for informational and conversational purposes only and is not intended as professional, medical, or mental health advice. Everyone's situation is unique, and what we talk about here may not apply to your specific circumstances. Please do what's right for you and always consult with a qualified professional for medical, mental health, financial, or legal guidance. You take care of you, boo. See you next time.